are Locked On 49ers, your daily San Francisco 49ers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On 49ers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Brian Peacock here with you once again on this Thursday edition of the show. My guest, John Ledyard. He is an NFL draft analyst. He writes for FanRag Sports. He scouts for NDT Scouting and is co-host of the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. They're pumping out tons of content daily talking about the draft. It's a must listen if you are into the draft and you're getting excited about who the 49ers might be picking up in April. If you would like to get at me or be a part of any of these mailbag segments we do on the show, hit me up on Twitter at BDPeacock, email the show LockedOn49ers@gmail.com, and go to LockedOn49ers.com. You can find the streams of the podcast there, plus a ton of other content. One bit of news I do want to talk about for the 49ers right now, and he's probably going to come up in this podcast, is Joshua Garnett. He's down to about 300 pounds, and he put a post out there showing himself standing on a scale. And we heard from Kyle Shanahan earlier this week talking about how he's pleased with the work Joshua Garnett has done to put himself into position to be slimmer, more athletic, and a better fit into this offense. So excited to see how that turns out and see if Joshua Garnett can fulfill the promise of that first-round draft slot that he had. And he was drafted for a different scheme and a different regime, so it's going to be fun to see how he fits in here. And love that he's put in the work, that he's committed to the 49ers, and hopefully he is that stud guard that the 49ers are going to need now to combat guys like Aaron Donald and Ndamukong Suh multiple times per season in the NFC West. So I did want to get that quick nugget out here before I bring on today's guest, John Ledyard. You know him from his work as host of Locked On NFL Draft right here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Also an NFL draft analyst for FanRag Sports and NDT Scouting. John, appreciate the time, man. Thanks so much for joining me here on Locked On 49ers.
Hey, no problem, Brian. Thanks so much for having me, man. I appreciate it.
So much to get into. One of the things I really want to talk to you about is pass rushers. But first, I just want to drop a sort of a big idea question on you about the top of the draft. I did a mock draft on Locked On 49ers the other day. Every time I'm kind of projecting out the top of the draft and how things will go before pick number nine, whether there's trades or not, it seems like there's going to be four quarterbacks, even though I was hesitating on believing that many quarterbacks were going to go early, but I got to believe there's four quarterbacks that go at the top, and then Saquon Barkley, Bradley Chubb, Quentin Nelson, in some order, those seven players go in the top seven. Do you see it that way as well? And if you do, who would be the next guy for you?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think that those seven are the most likely right now, the way that I see it, but something always seems to, you know, shake up. Something always seems to change, and somebody always seems to maybe slide a little bit. But I mean, I do feel confident that, you know, those guys, not only are they of that caliber of talent in the eyes of most of these teams, I think, but they also fit needs really clearly, especially if you see a team like Buffalo move up. I think that'll, if that ends up happening, you'll really see that get finalized and set in stone. I think it'll be very obvious at that point that I think four quarterbacks are coming off the board early. So that's probably likely, and obviously what 49ers fans are rooting for. You know, the Niners have put themselves in a situation where, you know, trading down's an option for them. You know, I mean, they've got a couple different options at their disposal. And I think that if those seven come off the board in the first seven picks, you know, that'll put Chicago on the clock and puts a guy like Tremaine Edmonds potentially in position for them. You know, Fangio loves those bigger, longer defenders with the athleticism still too. So he makes some sense to Chicago to me, in my opinion. But I think San Francisco, you know, they could be a team that targets somebody like Roquan Smith. They could be a team that likes a defensive back like a Minka Fitzpatrick or a Derwin James. Or they could be a team that moves back and ends up taking a running back or something like that, you know, to that degree. So there's a lot of different options, I think, for San Francisco. I think they feel good about their flexibility. I think they'll like a couple of different players on the board. And it looks like, for the most part, the guys that they would be targeting, you know, assuming that I just don't see Saquon Barkley as a great fit for Kyle Shanahan. So I think he's okay with him and the running backs coming off the board. And, you know, maybe pass rushers a desire for this team, but they've already spent a lot of picks on the defensive line. So Bradley Chubb going off the board, probably okay with them. I think most of the guys that San Francisco would have their eye on are probably going to be there for him at number nine.
it's really interesting that you mentioned Tremaine Edmonds, because he's the one that I'm thinking, you talked about how something crazy always happens. He's the one that I think might shake it up, just because you're talking about the pure upside play, a 19-year-old that's rolling in at 6'5", 250, runs a 4.5. And I think every coach out there sees a player like that and thinks, oh man, I could use him this way or this way or this way. And he could fit in just about any scheme. And the instincts might not be there, and I think Roquan Smith is a better player today, and I actually had the 49ers taking Tremaine Edmonds in that mock draft I did earlier this week, and it's just like, it's that upside play, and that's where teams start, that's where they make mistakes, but that's also where you find superstars, is the guy who's just a freak, and I think Tremaine Edmonds is that guy, and I think there's a good chance he's the one that does go early if someone kind of shakes up that first group of guys.
Yeah, it's definitely possible. Teams are going to be really intrigued by him. You mentioned, obviously, the physical and the athletic upside. But he also got a lot better as the year went on. You know, beginning of the year, you know, he looked like a mid-round type of prospect. And then toward the end of the year, you're seeing things and diagnosing. And you can say what you want about traits at linebacker, but it is such a mental position. You know, if you can't mentally process blocking schemes and attack them and, you know, find the ball and the direct flow of the ball and things like that, you're really not going to be successful, even if you have. We've seen a lot of really good athletes come and go at linebacker, but the guys that stick it out are the ones who are a notch above mentally. So to see Edmonds make those kind of strides was really encouraging. He's not as refined in those areas to me as a guy like Rashawn Evans or a guy like Roquan Smith, but I think he's got a lot of positives still going for him. I'm excited to see him continue to grow at the NFL level, and I think you're right, the teams are going to be really intrigued. I bet that he is a top 10 pick when it's all said and done.
And ideally for the 49ers, that only three of those quarterbacks do go at the beginning of the draft, and a team like Buffalo or whoever is calling the 49ers about trading back. Let's talk edge rushers here, because arguably the biggest long-term need for the 49ers is that stud, you know, flexible, double-digit sack guy off the edge. And I guess what team couldn't use another double-digit sack guy off the edge, really? But Niners have DeForest Buckner inside. They got a big end in Solomon Thomas. Both of those guys I expect to be studs, and Thomas is continuing to develop into his second year. Would you spend the ninth pick on a pass rusher like Harold Landry or Marcus Davenport if you thought the need was there and there was no trade down available for the 49ers?
I would spend maybe the ninth pick in the third round on Marcus Davenport, not in the first round. I would spend the ninth pick in the draft on Harold Landry for sure. Highly athletic, explosive edge rusher. If you're looking for traits at the pass rusher position, I mean, that guy offers about everything you can think of. He's long enough. He's big enough. He's got unbelievable bend. He's got unbelievable speed. His burst out of his stance is incredible. So he's the real deal, and the production was unbelievable. This past year, he played hurt. For a guy that relies on his athleticism to win, that was really tough for him. Definitely made a huge difference. He talked to me about that at the combine, said that it just, he could never get right throughout the whole year, you know, and it just threw off everything. So big impact on him, you know. I mean, I didn't think his tape was even that bad this year, but, you know, what you're missing with Harold Landry, I don't think he offers quite the same level of motor that Bradley Chubb offers. He's not as well-rounded as a pass rusher, but he has that one trump card, you know, and that explosiveness that he can win outside of a tackle, where Chubb, you know, he can win inside, he can go through you, he can go around you. I think Landry's mostly going to be a speed outside rusher, but if he learns to get counter moves in his game and be able to get back inside, the ceiling is sky high for him. The ceiling is higher for Harold Landry than it even is for Bradley Chubb, I think. And so he can be a double-digit sack guy in the NFL. And it is interesting because, you know, if you're the 49ers, I really expected Arik Armstead to get traded this offseason. I really thought that was something that's going to happen, and maybe it still is. But, you know, you have three first-rounders already on the defensive line. So at what point do you start saying, okay, we got to address other areas? You know, you spent obviously a first-rounder on Reuben Foster, but with the off-field stuff there, and Roquan Smith's got to be considered. And then, you know, the secondary, you're losing some people. Jimmy Ward has been okay. You know, he hasn't necessarily been the first rounder you hoped he'd be, but he's been okay. And, you know, he seems to be coming into his own a little bit. But a guy like, you lose Eric Reed, a guy like Derwin James or Micah Fitzpatrick for that locker room, for that secondary, you know, combine somebody like that with Richard Sherman, you know, in a lot of ways, Derwin and Minka have some blend of Earl Thomas, Cam Chancellor type abilities. And, you know, I think both those guys would make so much sense in Robert Slay's defense. So there's options like that for San Francisco that make a ton of sense too. I am of the camp that you prioritize the pass rusher if you need one. And I agree that they need one. You know, I'm really intrigued by Jeremiah Atachu. I've always been kind of intrigued by him. He didn't really get a shot, I didn't think, in with the Chargers. But I am intrigued to see what he brings to the table, but yeah, it's definitely a need for this team. And so at what point in the draft do they prioritize it? Because it isn't a deep edge rusher class, and a guy like Harold Landry, man, I mean, that becomes immediately one of the best defensive lines in football.
A quick reminder to subscribe, rate, review the show, iTunes, Spotify. We are everywhere. And of course, subscribe not only to Locked On 49ers, but my guest today's show, Locked On NFL Draft, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Getting back to Harold Landry, and I have a feeling when the 49ers are on the clock, the guy that I will have the highest grade on, the one I think is the best player available when the 49ers are choosing, will be Roquan Smith. But I wouldn't be surprised if they go another direction and they go with one of those upside safeties or even Harold Landry, and I would have no problem with it. And it makes me feel better to hear you talk about Harold Landry that way. And so, and the Marcus Davenport thing too is like, when I first watched him play, I was like, oh man, I like this guy. Maybe, a day two sort of a developmental project. And then people were talking about him as a top 10 pick. And I was thinking, oh man, okay, he's going to go that high. That's crazy. But I think it kind of, it came back down to earth after maybe the Senior Bowl, and he played a little bit better in the game, but, and I still think he probably ends up going in the first round because it's kind of like we talked about with Tremaine Edmonds. It's just like those height, weight, speed players get pushed up the board. And there's a couple of other guys I wanted to ask you about. Josh Sweat from Florida State tested ridiculous at the combine. And Arden Key, who I don't even know what to think about him anymore. I loved him as a freshman and sophomore in college. And then there was talk that he got up to 270 pounds before the season started last year and then quit the team. Like, I don't even know what to think about Arden Key. He could be still there on day three. He can go at the end of the first round. How do you see the rest of the pass rushers after the top couple of guys?
Yeah, Josh Sweat's definitely the number three edge pass rusher in this class, in my opinion. I actually thought the gap was huge between Chubb, Landry, and the rest of the group. First time through on Sweat, I saw some good things, but I didn't see anything that I really fell in love with. And then it was combine came, and I'd heard he was going to really kill it. He did, so it kind of sent me back to the tape and wanted to reevaluate some things. And, man, he has that explosiveness. And, Florida State used him out of position, and that was why it was really hard to get a gauge on his evaluation at first. And, a guy that's incredibly explosive but was often playing tight to the tackle or even inside as a three technique or a four-eye technique. He was used in that role a lot of the time. Just a terrible spot for his type of traits. The Miami game's a good one to watch Josh Sweat because, you can see that speed bend off the edge and, some of the tools that he offers. And he's got a nice cross chop at the top of the arc too. So, and he's a really good run defender right now. He plays with really low leverage. Good hand placement and things like that. He's powerful. He has a great motor too. A guy that's always in pursuit. Now, I'm a big, big fan of Josh Sweat. In fact, I ended up with a late first round grade on Josh Sweat. I didn't expect to have that when I entered his tapes. So I think he will go in the first round. I think the Rams makes a lot of sense for him. The Saints could make sense for him. There's a number of teams in the back end of the first. The Patriots could be another team that makes sense. But he just has incredible athletic upside. Tools are off the charts good. And I think that his best football is ahead of him. And from what we've heard, his medicals were great at the combine. So no really concerns from that knee injury he suffered a couple of years ago. I think he's a real deal. I think that he's going to be a really good NFL player. And I think that his tape does make it a little bit tough to evaluate him, but I think he's a real deal. And I think that the team is going to come away very impressed with him, especially if he lands somewhere he can keep developing a little bit as a pass rusher. I think he makes a ton of sense. And, to me, Arden Key is a guy that I just wouldn't touch. I mean, day three, maybe if he were still around at some point, I think the concerns are for real. He is all over the place on tape. His weight's all over the place. His commitment to the team is all over the place. His effort on the tape is all over the place. There's just way too many red flags. He graded out just based on pure tape. He's like a late day two, early day three guy, mostly going off 2017 tape because there's so much variation over his tape, it's almost impossible to grade him, but I just probably wouldn't draft him, to be honest, based on everything I've heard, and I'd let someone else take the risk, and if it pays off, it pays off. But yeah, I mean, he told me at the combine he was at 280 with his weight over the summer before the season started, then 270 when the season started, and now he's 238.
That's insane.
I just have no clue. I don't know what you're getting with a guy like that, and when you weight adjust his combine numbers, they're pretty poor, to me, he's just a huge project, and I'm just not sure I'd take the risk.
How about Kamoko Ture, round three area? The 49ers have a couple of big gaps when they pick in the draft. They have the pick, the ninth pick overall, then they don't pick again until the end of round two at 59, so that's a big gap. I wonder if they might try to close that with a little trade or something. And then they have three picks in a row there, 59, 70, 74, and then another big gap to late fourth round. Kamoko Ture is someone I'm looking at in that maybe early third round range. I don't think he'll still be on the board in round four. Do you agree?
Yeah, I would like to say I agree. I hope you're right, but it's Ture is a guy that's really difficult for to say where he'll go in the draft because, you know, two seasons he basically missed with injury, the shoulder concerns. What do the medicals say about him? Because it's been a legit problem for him in his career. He's a little bit older. The production isn't there that you would want from a guy at that point. And there were talk that he was in the doghouse at Rutgers, but Rutgers has been also known to mismanage a ton of players. So he is just a really tough one to figure out with all that extra stuff. You know, the teams are going to have to evaluate based on his tape and, you know, his pure ability, his athleticism. And I'm excited for us to get his full testing numbers. I think he only did the combine because he pulled his hamstring at the combine. He only did the 40, I think. But man, he can move. He's explosive. He needs to clean up some technical things, but he's got good hand usage as a pass rusher. He's got for real bend, some of the best bend in the class. So to me, if you're looking for a guy that's, you know, the Chubb, Landry, Sweat, if that's somewhat in some way your top tier or whatever, you know, if you're looking for a pure pass rusher after at that point, after those guys are off the board, Ture is the best one in the class. But I don't know when you're going to get him. I don't know all that extra stuff. That's going to affect where teams are going to take him. But he's the best guy in the class to take because he has not only the hand usage and some of the technique as a pass rusher, but also the athletic traits that you want to continue to develop at the position. And I think that his ceiling is really high. I just have no idea if he'll be able to get there because there are some mental lapses in run defense on tape that could keep him off the field. The injury stuff, like I said, you know, you wonder how much the lack of playing time at Rutgers hurt his development overall as a player. So there's definitely flags and some concerns. When I talked to him in Mobile, he seemed like a great guy, very bright, you know, high energy, high effort. And he's really high effort all the time on tape too. I mean, he chases everything. The guy's fanatical effort. So I like everything I've seen from him. I honestly think he's probably the fourth best pass rusher in this class. Sam Hubbard's probably a little more well-rounded than Ture, but I think Ture is a better pure pass rusher with way more upside than Hubbard.
Yeah, that's one of the most difficult parts about evaluating talent for the draft is the injury stuff that we don't really get to see. And I think back to some of the past draft, I do a shadow 49ers draft, and you know, I pick players right along with the 49ers when they're on the clock. And sometimes there'll be a player like Jay Ajayi, and I selected him for my shadow team in the third round. He falls to the fifth round. And then you find out, oh, he's bone on bone in the knee. It's like, okay, I didn't have that medical information. Or Martavis Bryant off-field stuff gets popped for pot at the combine, and you don't hear about that stuff until later, and he falls to the fourth round.
Right.
So there's a lot of other things that can happen. Josh Sweat also has some injury history that I think might affect him and could cause him to drop a little bit in the draft into the second round. So let's move to the offensive. Actually, no, one more quick question about the defenders in this draft. So if the 49ers don't go linebacker early, and they might even be sitting there day three, maybe late day two or day three, and they're looking for a linebacker that can come in, play middle linebacker, weak side linebacker, anything like that. I know Fred Warner is one of your guys. I like Sky Moore a little bit. I like his ability and coverage. Any names you like in day three of the draft that could come in and play some linebacker?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, Sky Moore's a good one to mention too. You know, you hit the nail on the head with two guys there. You know, Moore has had some off-field issues, has had some injury issues. If all that's sorted out for him, he didn't run as well as I maybe hoped, but still for a linebacker, he moves really well. He offers some good things in coverage. I think that he's very physical. He'll keep getting better, I think, in the NFL. That'll be the key with him. He's not necessarily a finished product right now, but he's definitely a guy that could step in. I think Warner's going to go day two, so he'd probably be an earlier type of pick. You know, Warner really has unbelievable traits. The key with him is going to be he played like a slot overhang type role, occasionally stepped up. I mean, often was on the line of scrimmage, I guess, as a 3-4 outside linebacker, but never rushed the passer, like never. So he was always in coverage. And so it's kind of a weird role. You know, BYU's defense has kind of always had that reputation. They're just kind of a weird, unique defense. So how well does he transition to a traditional off-ball type of role? He looked terrific in Mobile in that role, you know, key in processing, coming downhill in the team sessions, you know, flying into offensive linemen, taking on blocks and finishing as a tackler, you know, did some really good things. So I was really impressed there. I think that he is going to end up going a little bit higher than some of the, you know, guys like Sky Moore. And you know, Jack Seachie's another one. You know, I think he could play some will. He could eventually become a Mike backer. You know, he already tested, did an unbelievable, I think he had a 6.883 cone at Wisconsin Pro Day. So that knee injury, you know, it doesn't seem like it's holding him back at all. He's getting good reports. So that's really good stuff. The fact that he's already able to do those change of direction drills at that level is really, really impressive. So there's some upside with CG, one of the toughest dudes in this draft. I like any of those guys. I mean, this is a deep class. There's some really interesting players. And if CG gets a clean bill of health and Sky Moore does and the off-field checks out, you know, either of those guys on day two make a lot of sense. Or day three, I'm sorry.
Yeah, how's this for a comp for Fred Warner? I don't know if you do comps or anything like that, but I was thinking in watching him play, a lot of the things you described is I wanted to compare him to Telvin Smith, who played in Robert Saleh's scheme in Jacksonville at that weak side linebacker spot. I saw his ability to cover, and I saw his athleticism, and I thought he'd be a nice transition to play weak side linebacker for the 49ers. Do you like that comp?
Oh, yeah. I mean, for sure, if you get – and, you know, Telvin, what's set Telvin apart really is that Telvin came in and was an unbelievable athlete, undersized, but that would be okay because he played ahead of schedule so much, but he's just continued to get better mentally, and especially in coverage. You know, I mean, he's continued to develop in that way. And I think that that's going to be the big thing with Warner. You know, it's a terrific athlete with the traits to be great in coverage, but Warner has a little more experience, so I think he'll be in coverage. So I think he'll be better in coverage right away than Telvin was. But I think in terms of the processing, he'll have to catch up and run defense and in reading and reacting in some ways that Telvin was maybe a little bit further ahead of him. But in terms of skill set, yeah, I mean, if you get Fred Warner in a will linebacker spot, you know, I'm not ruling out him eventually being a Mike, but if you get him in a will linebacker spot where he can chase things from the backside, you know, he's really effective in that role. But I love the fact that he can also be your Sam. You know, he can step up and play on the line of scrimmage if you need it. You know, if you're going multiple fronts and you need, you know, a guy to step up on the line of scrimmage and play, you know, he's very physical at the point of attack. He stacked and shed blocks at the line of scrimmage really well too. You know, I don't think he's a pass rusher, so I wouldn't want him there full time. But as a run defender, he could absolutely, you know, hold up full time as a 3-4 outside linebacker. So he's able to play in kind of multiple looks, which is really encouraging, I think. And I think he'll be his stock has stayed quiet for some reason. That kind of, you know, even after a really impressive combine, an impressive Senior Bowl, it doesn't sound like anybody's talking about him. I know us at NDT, we're always talking him up. So yeah, I think he does some great things. I think he's going to be a really good NFL player, and the best is yet to come for Fred Warner.
By the way, this is John Ledyard. You can find him on Twitter at Ledyard NFL Draft. He's an analyst, FanRag Sports, NDT Scouting. And of course, you've got to check out Locked On NFL Draft. Fantastic podcast this time of year. It's a must listen podcast hosted by John Ledyard and Trevor Sikkema. Great work by those guys over there. All right, so moving to the offensive side of the ball real quick. I talked about how the 49ers have a group of picks between 59 and 74, and I really expect them to draft an offensive lineman there, possibly a guard, maybe someone who could play guard and center, and a wide receiver. So let's start with the offensive line. One of my favorite players in the draft, in the entire draft, is Frank Ragnow, and I would love him in that 70 to 74 range at the top of the third round. I think that's an ideal spot for him. I think that's kind of the area he will go. Any other offensive linemen you like in that area of the draft?
Yeah, Ragnow's interesting because I would say I really see him as a center, and they just signed Richburg, so it's like, you know, could he make a transition to guard? Could Richburg make a transition to guard? I mean, center is a really important position in Shanahan's offense, and it sounds like they've got Richburg really pegged for that, so yeah. Maybe Ragnow could transition to guard. I definitely don't rule that out. I think that's a possibility. What kind of player Kyle Shanahan is looking for is really interesting because I would never have pegged Josh Garnett coming out as a fit for Kyle Shanahan's scheme, but yet it seems like that's kind of the direction they're headed. And, you know, as long as Garnett can make that transition, that's great. He's going to be behind the eight ball, though, being injured last year. So what their plans are with him, again, he's kind of like an Eric Armstead situation for me. I wouldn't have been shocked if they had tried to trade Garnett. But again, I don't really know if the market's great for him, so I'd like to see what he can do. I love Garnett coming out. So I'd love to see what he can do in this type of scheme. Again, you know, Lakin Tomlinson, they brought him over, so clearly they see him in this, in, you know, outside zone heavy scheme. It's going to be interesting. I don't know whether those guys are great fits or not. I think that, you know, that range of the draft, a guy like Austin Corbett from Nevada makes a ton of sense. You know, he's a guy that can absolutely move, but has really good technique as well. He played tackle in Nevada, but was undersized there, but is going to move inside in at the NFL. And I thought he was the best center in Mobile at the combine. You know, he did really good things, and he hadn't really snapped at all. So, you know, if you see Corbett, you don't think offensive lineman. If you see him just walking around, you know, he doesn't even look like the biggest guy or anything. But you get on tape, I mean, he is so strong and physical, and you just would never guess at seeing him walk around. So it's really interesting. But I think he's going to go high. I think he's going to go, you know, early to mid day too, because he can move. He's technical. He's very tough. He's very physical. I think teams are really going to like him. So he makes some sense there for sure. I also think Wyatt Teller is an interesting player. Has to get better technically with his posture and pass protection, I think, and his footwork and run run blocking. But he's a very physical player that's very aggressive as well. And I think he's got some traits to maybe project well to that. And if day three you're looking for a guy that makes sense, Colby Gossett from Appalachian State. This is a guy that ran tons of outside zone at Appalachian State. So it's a scheme fit made in heaven. He's extremely mobile, a very physical, good with his hands. Pass protection's the big bugaboo for him. He needs time to develop because he's going to get worked in pass protection early on. I think he might go day three, but he's got, I mean, an unbelievable frame, really nice athleticism and movement skills. In the run game, he's an asset. If they can get him right in pass protection, and he has great traits for pass pro, I think he's going to be a starter in the NFL.
Colby Gossett, that's a good name. I don't have to go back and watch him. I've not watched him play yet. So one last question for you. It's kind of a similar idea to the last one. Wide receiver. The Niners do need some size at wide receiver. They didn't do anything in free agency to add some talent. I think they are absolutely going to draft a wide receiver. It's a nice sweet spot, late second, early third. And it's really, I think every team is going to have a very different draft board when it comes to ranking the wide receivers. And it's hard, you know, after Calvin Ridley, I would guess is probably the top guy for most teams, I would assume. And after that, it could go really in any direction. How do you like the wide receivers at the top? And is there anybody you see in that early round three range that you would absolutely pound the table for?
Yeah, this is a really interesting wide receiver class. You know, probably one of the most interesting ones since I've been scouting, just because, like you said, there's tons of different flavors for everybody, but it's not like other years where there's been tons of different flavors at the top and then tons of different flavors in the middle. There's just really nobody at the top. You know, there's not really any elite type talents, which is why I think we could honestly see the first round go by and zero receivers get drafted. You know, likely, I guess, probably one or maybe two sneak in, but I don't even think people can find a consensus on who those two would be. I don't know. If you ask people to take all the wide receivers in this class and just vote on who would be the first one off the board, I think you see tons of names get high percentage of votes, because I don't think anyone has any clue who's going to be the first receiver off the board. So there's guys that make a ton of sense for Shanahan for that offense. I mean, I have no idea. Like Calvin Ridley, if he's on the board, wouldn't even shock me. And I think he might be one of the best receivers in this class. Anthony Miller from Memphis, you know, he's probably going to be available throughout day two at some point. I just keep, you know, we'll see. His pro day is coming up, I think, April 4th, and we'll see how he tests. But, you know, not necessarily the biggest dude, but, I mean, his routes are unbelievable on tape. You know, I mean, he's to me, I think he might be the best wide receiver in this class. I have an early day two grade on him, but I think he might go later than that. And I think, you know, San Francisco could have a shot at him. He could play in the slot. He has the speed to play outside too. So he offers a lot of really good things as well. Can do some things post-catch. And, I mean, if you're looking for just this pure vertical speed threat, you know, DJ Chark makes a ton of sense. I don't know where he's going to come off the board. You know, his speed, you could see, you've seen lesser players get taken in round one just based off of speed. His production and tape don't speak to round one, but I do think he's a high upside guy that fills a definite role. So 49ers definitely need, you know, they have their possession guy in Garcon, a guy that, you know, Goodwin obviously can stretch the field and be a speed threat too, can play inside a little bit as well. But, you know, you could definitely use another receiver on the outside to stretch the field. And I know they like Kendrick Bourne, some things he does, Trent Taylor as a slot guy. You know, I think that the 49ers like their receiver group maybe more than other people do, which, like, is their prerogative, and they've seen a lot more of these guys. But bringing back Goodwin, you know, I mean, Garcon, being here and being a guy that they signed. And I know we've all heard kind of what that they like Bourne and what they think of him. And, you know, Terran Taylor was fairly productive last year. Not that he'll be given a spot automatically, but I think that this is a guy that, you know, that did some nice things in his offense and that he picked, you know, as a piece that could fill a real void for them. So there isn't really that dynamic number one type of guy, but then this draft doesn't really have one either. So, you know, if I were the 49ers, I'd be patient. You know, just you've got other needs you can address. If you don't come away with, there isn't a real big game changer to come away with, in my opinion, a wide receiver. By the time you draft one, there's definitely not going to be one available. So, you know, right now you've got a bunch of receivers that fill specific roles. Figure out the role that you want a receiver to fill on your team, and then draft the guy that best suits that role, even if he isn't the most well-rounded guy or the most dynamic player. You know, find a guy to fill the role, because right now this is just a receiver group. They're all going to have to wear their specific hat and really thrive at what they do in order to be effective as a unit.
Yeah, that was a great point about DJ Chark too, because in a draft where it's really hard to rank these guys, the athletic freak, the guy that works out like he did, looks good at the Senior Bowl, has such a good offseason, could vault up. Wouldn't surprise me at all if he's the first one and he's the guy that goes in the first round, but he could still be there at the top of the third. I just have no idea. And it's going to be interesting to see how teams value the upside play and, you know, Equanimeous St. Brown and Cortland Sutton and the guys with the size that have some speed, or the guys that already look like pros, like you mentioned Anthony Miller, or Michael Gallup is even another guy I like that gets lost even in this class. So that's going to be a fun one for me, and interesting to see how those wide receivers stack up. And actually, Richie James, have you watched Richie James? Another guy, day three, if he's there on day three, love that guy.
Right, and I think he probably will be. So yeah, I mean, another speed vertical threat. You can find guys that fill specific roles. You just have to have guys to complement them, or they won't be able to fulfill those roles. You know, it's like if you're going to draft a team, you'll acquire and build a roster of teams, of a team with the wide receivers who each do, you know, one thing really well, you've got to be able to find complementary skill sets. And so far they have, you know, a pure slot in Trent Taylor, a speed outside threat who can play a little bit inside, maybe in Goodwin, you know, a guy like Pierre Garçon's a pure possession guy, can help you underneath. So they've done a good job of that so far. You'd add another player to that mix, and it's another threat the teams have to contend with. And I think that's really the way the 49ers are looking at building this receiving corps, until someone else steps up, until there becomes that type of player available. But right now, you know, that really hasn't happened. I didn't think there was a guy like that maybe in free agency. You know, maybe Allen Robinson, but coming off an injury, you know, you're looking to give money to different types of players, and I thought it was wise the 49ers kind of stayed patient at that spot and keep finding the type of guys that they need to win, because Garoppolo was really successful with those guys. So, you know, don't push it. Just be patient with it, I think, and the right player will end up there. Shanahan knows the type of guy that he needs to thrive in that offense. I think he'll be able to find him. And then I would say that down the road, that's a position the 49ers are looking to improve at when the time is right and the roster is in position to do so.
That is John Ledyard. Find him on Twitter at Ledyard NFL Draft, his work at FanRag Sports, his work at NDT Scouting. A ton of great guys working over there at NDT. They're up on their game every season. And of course, subscribe to Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. John, really appreciate the time, man. Thank you.
Hey, no problem. Thanks so much for having me, Brian. I really appreciate it.
Big thanks to John for joining me on the show today. He's a busy man this time of year, and I mean it when I say it's a must-subscribe podcast, Locked On NFL Draft, this time of year. So thanks to John for making a little bit of time for me here on Locked On 49ers. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Be back Monday right here on Locked On 49ers.